My message this morning is entitled Persistence as a Mark of Faith. Well, on the heels of yesterday's amazing Women's March, I can't escape the feeling that this story, a story about a woman persisting, a woman who stands up for herself and her family, well, I just can't help but feel like there couldn't be a better time to hear and learn from this story. This is much more of a complicated story than our reading of it might suggest. After a lot of study and consideration, I believe that the author of Matthew has a hidden meaning inside of this for us to discover. So I think it will be helpful if we retell the story, sort of get inside of it and understand its contextual complexities. And in doing so, I hope that we will not only derive Matthew's intended message, but we will also receive a very clear directive for our lives today. Now, one of my largest frustrations with the Bible is rooted in the culture in which it was cultivated. Women who were mostly second-class citizens at best and property at worst frequently go unnamed in the Bible, even when they're the main character in the story. So, for the purpose of this talk, we will give her a name. Extra-canonical tradition that was used by the early church, stories and writings used by the early church, but wasn't included in the Bible when it was put together in the year 367. Extra-canonical tradition names her Justa, meaning just or justice. So in our story, we will name her Justa. Justa was a Canaanite. She's among a group of people who must stay two arm lengths away from any Jewish man at all times, and whose homes were considered unclean and therefore off limits to all Jews. And the hatred between the Jews and the Canaanites even led to the contemptuous but unfortunately common slang of dog to refer to Gentiles. So in short, Justa was an outsider. She lived on the outskirts of town, on the border between Jewish and Gentile lands. But she was also on the border in so many other ways. She was a woman, so she was property. She was Canaanite, so she was the enemy. She was from a rural people, so she was an outsider. She was a Gentile. She was unclean, a non-believer. She may have even been thought of as demonic because, after all, they believed her child to be possessed by a demon. In almost every way, she was seen as less than, undeserving, an outsider, a person living on the borders of life. Then enter Jesus and the disciples. In an effort to escape a recent run-in with the Pharisees, they had headed out to this borderland. They were probably just hoping to find a little rest and relaxation, a little peace and quiet, but when they get there, they find neither peace nor quiet. A woman started shouting, more specifically in the Greek, it suggests that she kept following them and shouting, almost like her own one-woman march. As the story's told, at the very first, Jesus, well, he tries to just ignore. I think it's probably a game that we have all played before, just basically going, you know, maybe if I just don't pay attention to her, she'll leave me alone. She doesn't. She persists. She begins then to get on the very last nerve of the disciples. And they plead with Jesus. They plead and say, Jesus, please, just give her what she wants and maybe she'll then just leave us alone. Jesus' reply, though, seems curious. He says, I was sent only to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. Basically, if they're standing there, pleading, he says, I'm not here to help her kind. Any one of us would have felt defeat. Any one of us would have tucked tail and run. She doesn't. She persists. Now, Jesus' words may seem cruel to us, and with good reason, but when you place them within in the larger biblical context, Jesus' resistance to helping her, well, it's rooted in his messianic identity. Basically, the way he might have understood it would have been that in sticking to his call, and we talked about the power of call last week, in sticking to his call, he probably understood that he would be able not only to help Israel, but afterwards the rest of the world as well. I'm not saying that makes it better, but it does help us understand where his mindset was. So just as an outsider, living on so many borders, she's rebuked by the disciples, and Jesus ignores her, and then after badgering her, after he badgers her, he finally says, I'm not here to help your kind. Jessa should have just thrown in the towel. She doesn't. She persisted and responds to Jesus' words by kneeling before him and asking for mercy. She believes to her very toes, the very supposedly unclean toes of her feet, that Jesus can and will heal her daughter. She persists. Well, in the face of such a great example, Jesus just has to respond kindly. He doesn't. It, he says, is not fair to take children's food and throw it to the dogs. Throw it to the dogs? Just while groveling on the dirt, on all fours, has just been called a dog. She should have just picked herself and her pride up and went home. She doesn't. She persists. Then Jessa uses Jesus' own words to remind him of something about that messianic identity that I just mentioned. Even the dogs, she says, eat crumbs from their master's table. Now, typically I'd want to talk a little bit about the word master, but in this dog-human context, I'm willing to sort of just let it slide this time. But in those brief words from her, Jessa gives an entire sermon. She reminds Jesus that, yes, he is here for the children of Israel that sit at the table, but that after they eat, so will the rest of the world. Her persistence is a mark of her faith that he can help her daughter. Well, what else was he to do? Woman, he says, great is your faith. Let it be done for you as you wish. And as the story is told, her daughter was healed instantly. So, well, what does this story mean for us today? I think that there are two very clear directives that we can take with us. One is for those who find themselves marginalized on the borders of life, and one is for those of us who don't count ourselves amongst that group. That is, one is for those of us who might marginalize from our places of privilege. In Jessa, we learn about the importance of persistence for those who are marginalized. Let me say that again. We learn about the importance of persistence for those who are marginalized. Well, I mean, what does that look like lived out in life? What does it look like? It looks like Elm Street in Greensboro, February 1, 1960. Four freshmen from North Carolina A&T University defied the segregationist policies so prevalent in the South United States by boldly asking to be served at the whites-only lunch counter at the Woolworth department store. In the face of the controversy, some would say they should have just gone home. They don't. They persisted. Their courageous act launched the sit-in movement that was a major component of the civil rights movement. They persisted. They demanded to be recognized as equal. They had been marginalized and pushed out to the borders of society, And in the face of that challenge, in the controversy, they stood firm. They stood firm in their faith. They persisted. The life of Dr. King is also a shining example of this justice syndrome, this persistence from those who are pushed through the borders of society. Dr. King described what I'm calling the justice syndrome this way. He said, "The ultimate measure of a man or a woman is not where they stand in moments of comfort and convenience, but where they stand in times of challenge and controversy." And then Dr. King's words also bring us to our second lesson, I believe, our second lesson from the story of Justice. The lesson for those of us not marginalized, the privileged. Here his words again, "The ultimate measure of a person is not where they stand in moments of comfort and convenience, but where they stand at times of challenge and controversy." We learn from this the importance for those who are in privileged places to reach out to the marginalized, to listen to them and stand with and for them as they proclaim their rights, their value, and their equality. Dorothea Dix was gifted from an early age. At the age of 15, actually 15, she started her own private school. And it's fair to say that while she was a good person with a good heart, Dorothea came from a place of privilege. One day later in her life, a ministerial student came seeking advice about a woman's Sunday school class, and she listened to the woman's concerns and wishes, and then she volunteered to teach the class, which might not seem like that big of a deal. But the catch was that it was at a prison. And in 1841, well, it just wasn't proper for a lady of privilege to be in a place like a prison. She should have just given up. Should have stayed home. She did it. She persisted. And then, you know, when she was there, when she saw the condition of the mental illness, she was absolutely horrified. And in order to help them claim back their humanity, she took on the state of Massachusetts, then other states, then the U.S. government. Then she traveled to England, Scotland, France, Austria, Italy, Greece, Turkey, Russia, Sweden, Denmark, Holland, Belgium, and Germany, challenging the way the world saw and treated the mentally ill. She was challenged at every corner, and she did not give up. Why? In her own words, "In a world where there is so much to be done, I felt strongly impressed that there must be something for me to do." The justice syndrome tells us that oppressed groups must be persistent in seeking liberation from subjugation. In harmony with that, Jesus' response in this story indicates that reaching out to those we have marginalized is an essential part of living a spiritually honest life, and that we should never perceive those we consider outsiders as somehow more distant from or less deserving of love and grace. When we can step out into the margins and claim love and value and equality for all people, then and only then can we say that we, like Jesus in this story, have learned the power of the persistence of faith. We just saw this justice syndrome yesterday as millions upon millions of women and men as well took to the streets in the second ever Women's March. And what happened at those marches? Those who had been marginalized spoke out against the powerful. They spoke out about how they abused their power, how they used their power to abuse others. They demanded that all people be treated with love, as valuable, as equals. They persisted. insisted. And that, my friends, that is how positive, meaningful change is ushered in. It always has been. We persist. I'd like to give you the opportunity to respond to the scripture, the message, or just the theme for the day. Are there thoughts that you would like to share with this spiritual community? David.
Well, I'd like to point out, continue your exegesis on the lady's position, point out that there's no mention of a man in her life, which implies that she was a single mother.
Yep.
And so in a place which is dominated by male domination, then she was really out there.
Yep.
And also she used some of the techniques Dr. King used. She was nonviolent,
yep.
And she used his words against him.
Exactly.
So she really, she did a nice job of pioneering the way.
Pioneered the nonviolent resistance movement. Right. Good points, thank you. Are there others? It seems like we do this brother-sister tag team.
Good morning, I'm Elsie. Thank you, Mark. I always, the other piece for me in this story, or one of the others, is her request was very personal. She had found, she had identified a burning issue for her. And I think that's where I have difficulty sometimes, is to find the peace for me, the burning issue. And I think you said it, Dorothea Dix, of there's so much to be done that it can be overwhelming. How to find that peace that we can move forward.
Yeah, I think that makes a great point.
Yeah, and thank you for your message. I loved making something that otherwise you just read through and go,
Oh, thanks. I appreciate it.